clicked on it. It's supposed to be starting, but it's maybe it's cold too.
Usually there's a little noise that it makes, but
yeah. Well, it's that I've got like one bar on the computer that says, "Okay, there it goes."
Yeah.
There was a little click, I think.
Yeah, I think I heard that. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
I'll go ahead then. May we all stand firm in the knowledge and comfort that all things are now, have always been, and forever will be in divine order, unfolding according to a divine plan. And may we truly surrender to this truth, whether we understand it or not. May we also ask for support in consciousness in feeling our connection with the divine part of us, with everyone and everything, so that we can truly say we are one.
Good. Thank you, Joanne.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amen.
It's always good to start with that one, to remind ourselves of what radical forgiveness is. And we might need to go over the concept a little later on. I've had some conversations with people, even some of our own coaches, and as I'm listening to them, I'm thinking, you know what, I'm not sure they really got it. You found that too, Carla?
Oh, I don't know about our coaches. I think they're pretty well-trained, Carla.
Well, people in training, shall we say that. People
in training, yes.
Yeah.
Some of our trainees are
still
working
but,
hard
know,
on it.
It's an easy concept to sort of, it's slippery. It's a slippery thing, and when we try to apply it to our own lives and to daily things that happen to us, you know, sometimes it gets away from us and we revert back to earlier forms of forgiveness. So we may recap that a minute. I'm sure we'll have a question that'll come up that will give us an opportunity to do this. I've got a statement from Cindy here which says hello from Chile, Michigan. I guess it's chilly everywhere. What's the temperature in Michigan, Cindy? She's not on, maybe, huh? It must be if she's asking a question.
Yeah, we have some background noise. Should we go ahead and mute everyone, Colin?
I think so. It sounds like somebody's running the bath or something.
It's really hard to hear. Mute.
All right. It's a shame that we have to mute everybody, but there's always one person who's either washing dishes or running a bath or doing something other than listening, and it spoils it for everybody else because we could have some interchange if we didn't have to mute everybody. But anyway, that's the way it goes. Hardy, you'd mentioned an issue there, actually, that we can pick up on. Let me read out the question that Hardy had sent in. What happens if we run out of people we're angry at or want to do the worksheet 13 steps on? Is this a spiritual bypass at work? Marcus and I have been doing the 13 steps weekly for a number of months, and we're both running out of people to work on. Any suggestions? Yeah, I have a suggestion, Harley. Do it on the person who's running a bath or doing the dishes at this particular moment. Because the point about this is that radical forgiveness is something that we use each and every day almost, because there's always something that crops up that's an irritation to us, and that when we get used to doing radical forgiveness daily, or at least, you know, as soon as something comes up, then it becomes a habit of mind. So I appreciate that you've been working hard on forgiving a lot of people from the past or currently, you know, always be looking for that opportunity to use the 13 steps anytime that you feel a little judgmental about somebody. Even if that person is on the television or you have some strong judgments about them, because as we know, when we have judgments about people, it's always a reflection of our own shadow, and it's an opportunity for us to love ourselves and to forgive ourselves. So, you know, I'm not saying that you have got to be obsessive about using these tools, but always think of them as something that you can put your hands on at any moment when things irritate you or you get upset. So
I've noticed for myself that the evening news is a fascinating place for triggering me in reaction to things.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Tiger Woods has given us a wonderful opportunity to look at that part of ourselves with the self-sabotage. You know, I mean, if there's one thing that we can say about that particular incident is that, you know, there he is at the top of his game, and yet something's come up from deep down in his shadow to sabotage his whole career. And I'm sure that's happened to all of us at some time or another. So if we find ourselves in judgment of somebody like Tiger, then it's a wonderful opportunity for us to forgive ourselves and to allow that judgment to reflect back onto our own shadow and an opportunity to heal that. So.
And then again, it's also nice to just be in gratitude that you don't have anybody to forgive.
Yeah.
So celebrate with gratitude, too, I'd say.
Yeah.
This is Carla. Joanne, you know, you're always such a great one for reminding us about the gratitude. And I'm in a place of great gratitude right now for all of my loved ones. It's the strangers that bring up issues for me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was telling Colin earlier that a friend and I had gone to see the movie Young Victoria, and there were two women sitting down the row from us, and the woman closest to me was on her BlackBerry or cell phone or something texting throughout the movie.
Oh, God.
And there was a bright light coming from her, you know, whatever the unit was she was using.
Yeah.
And it was just causing a glare in my eyes. And I was so irritated every time that started.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I really had to restrain myself from leaning over toward her and giving her a piece of my mind.
Yeah, you were very restrained. I would have.
Well, the reason I restrained myself is because the friend I was with is somebody that I have embarrassed when I've been confrontational before, and I knew I would embarrass him, and so it was more out of consideration for him.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
Uh-huh. But yeah, it's an ideal opportunity to at least do the four step process in that moment. Did you mention?
Yeah, but I didn't even think of it. I was so ticked off.
Yeah, that's it.
That happens.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Once you go into victim land, it's hard to think of the tools. But just in case you don't know the four steps, you folks, I'm sure most of you do, but if you don't know it, it's, hey, look what I've created. I notice my judgments and feelings, but love myself anyway. I'm willing to see the perfection in this situation, and I choose peace. So if you do those four steps, that often helps to at least take some of the energy out of the situation. So, but if you can remember to use it. All right. Thanks, Hardy, for that one. Can we unmute just Hardy, or can we unmute him in case Hardy wants to ask a supplemental? What's the issue there?
Okay, Colin? Yeah, let me go ahead and do that. Actually, what I will do is I will unmute everybody, but then ask everybody to individually mute yourselves unless you want to participate in the conversation with Colin.
Okay.
And you can mute yourselves by pressing *6. So unless somebody has walked away from the phone and isn't hearing this instruction, then we could be able to have everybody available to participate.
Right.
So let me do that now. I'm going to hit unmute everyone and then ask you to hit *6 for yourselves. After
Except
this.
Hardy.
Just a moment. Okay, everyone's hitting *6 now. And Hardy, if you're there and want to chat with Colin.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Do you have a supplemental there?
I do agree with you. You know, doing it in the moment is certainly helpful, and that's one thing we, you know, typically Marcus and I sort of schedule our calls ahead of time, and then
you
know, at the moment when we get together, then we don't have anything. But,
yeah, Marcus is a member of your support group, correct?
Well, yeah, except that and I've done some 13 steps on the support group that fell apart, and only Marcus and I really kept going on it.
Uh-huh.
The group fell apart after two calls.
Yeah. Well, it happens.
It happens. Yeah.
But as you know, two people counts as a group. So
yeah.
That could,
yeah.
That
so we do that with each other. But you're definitely right. Doing it in the moment is much better.
Yeah.
And I've just found it extremely helpful to do it for each other.
Yes.
Much better than doing it for myself, because
absolutely.
It just adds a sense of depth there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And one other question I would have is there possibly a need to go deeper? For instance, you know, I've done a worksheet on, and also 13 steps a number of times on someone who has hurt me deeply, you know, big bucks and everything else, lawsuits and everything else. Is there a way of going deeper there, other than just doing it on the same person again, reciting the same crap that I've recited before?
Yeah, I know the issue because you've been to a workshop and worked on it. So it's something you just have to keep on doing until the pain of it or the loss goes away.
But doing it in the same way, or is there some other way of going deeper here? Or?
Well, yeah, there's other ways. There's like screaming in the car.
Okay.
She's big into doing the anger stuff, Hardy.
Okay.
Make sure that you are giving yourself permission to feel the outrage about the situation. But, you know, each time you do it, you're going to get further insight in it. And each time you do it, you're going to make the choice to let it go and to feel the peace, you know, that it was a lesson for you. It was done for you. It wasn't done against you.
No, I realize that. Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just a reminder each time you do it.
Yeah, and I have to say it has helped, because nowadays when I see that truck there, with the big name plastered on it, I can even send this truck and the driver, I can send him peace and love, and I don't have a problem with that anymore. So I know I've made progress.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, just keep going.
And the other question, and I don't want to dominate, but, you know, talking about Tiger Woods, for instance, and judging him, you know, I sense this guy, he's a poor little guy. He doesn't know any better. I don't have any anger toward him at all. So is there an issue that maybe I'm spiritually bypassing this or what?
No, our judgments can take a lot of different forms, and we can, I mean, I've heard people say, well, what an idiot that he did that. You know, how could he be so stupid? Or, you know, he had this beautiful wife, why did he have to go looking? You know, all of those things are judgments. And it gives us an opportunity to feel some understanding and some empathy for him. He's in the same category as Andre Agassi, who was forced into doing sports from the age of four and hated tennis. And Andre, I don't know whether you've seen anything about him and his new books, but he hated tennis and he acted that out for the first half of his adult life with drugs and everything else. So, you know... somebody at the top of his game like that, you never know what's underneath it. So it just gives you more insight into people and into insight into yourself, and how we can all be acting out some of our childhood wounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hardy, hi from Jill from Wyoming. I know I met you on the cruise ship where we all had so much fun with Colin and Joanne. And
yes, hi.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say thank you, Colin and Joanne and everyone. I used the 13 steps on my CD coming in last night on a trip from Denver and really healed some energy that I thought was gone with my child of the past. So
good.
Just wanted to pass that along today.
All right.
Terrific.
Thank you. let me pick up on something there that Hardy said about the idea of doing the 13 steps with another person. We do have available on our website as a free program, how to run a radical forgiveness support group. And a support group is just four people or two or three people that would be willing to get together periodically, perhaps once a week or once every 2 weeks, to just remind each other of the habit that we need to be in as far as dealing with life. And taking someone else through the 13 steps is wonderful. Or having someone else take you through the 13 steps does enhance the process. So I just wanted to let everybody know that we do have this support group, how to run a support group instruction, available on the website, and very much recommend that if you want to really take this seriously and do it and get into the habit of doing it, then running a support group is a great way to do it. All the instructions are in there. You don't have to invent it yourself. All right, good. There's another question here that I'm going to go on to, and that's it's a quick question, but it's a lot of depth to it, and it's from Donna in New Jersey. How can I use radical forgiveness for depression? I have been depressed for years. I've used the worksheets and the 13-step process on other issues and found radical forgiveness to be very beneficial. Thank you for bringing it to us and for your generosity in this online program. Many blessings. So, Carla, I think we better mute everybody because somebody's got a phone open.
Okay.
Yeah, we're definitely getting some feedback.
Yeah. Okay. Is that it? Yeah, that's good. Okay. How can I use radical forgiveness for depression? Well, the question really is, what's underneath the depression? You know, a depression is not there for no good reason. Now, I think there is a difference between clinical depression, which is maybe a chemical imbalance in the brain, and depression that's caused by emotional factors. And that's what I want to address here, because I think, you know, we have to make that distinction. But to me, what I have found over the years in doing the workshop, that depression is caused by repressed rage. And so the answer to your question, Donna, is to ask you, who is it that comes to mind when you're depressed? If you were to ask yourself, who is it that I'm, or what feelings am I holding on to about somebody that is causing my depression? You might write that as a question and wait for an answer. I don't know how you get answers. Maybe you pray, or maybe you write something down before you go to bed and you dream about it. Whatever way that you can access your subconscious to use it to find out what it is that you are stuffing and have repressed for a long time that is causing your depression. Because I think, you know, repressed rage is always going to be boiling deep down somewhere. And the effect of it often is that we get, it saps our life force and collapses our spirit and makes us feel just absolutely useless and horrible. So that would be my answer to that question. It's a matter of inquiry now for you to see what's under that depression. Do you want to comment on that, Carla, at all?
I've often heard therapists refer to depression as anger turned inward, and I think you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
And I think, again, like the situation I mentioned today, you know, I suppressed my anger. I knew it was still there. But many of us have gotten so practiced at suppressing anger because we've told it's not appropriate that we do it on autopilot, and we don't even realize we're doing it.
Yeah.
So sometimes just maybe even doing a worksheet and talking to depression. I've had my clients do that, where they've given depression almost a personality.
Yeah.
And that's a good idea, to give it a name.
Yeah.
Depressed Deborah or depressed Daniel.
Yeah,
part
and
of
just
myself.
Talk to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and to see if you can find, I think doing something before you go to bed, asking the question and say, you know, can this be revealed to me in my dream? Because dreaming is a wonderful way of accessing the subconscious, but you do have to ask it and listen to it and have your pencil and paper by your bed at the minute you wake up, otherwise you lose it. That's that is one way if you're a dreamer. or meditating and simply asking the question there. So, all right, okay. Linda of New Mexico asked me, does the concept of radical forgiveness coincide with the Course in Miracles? Well, clearly, if you have studied the Course in Miracles, that you will see that there are some similarities, and some parts of it coincides and some parts of it does not. I have to admit that I have not been a student of the Course in Miracles. I just couldn't get into it. It's too difficult. The language, I couldn't get with it. I would fall asleep before I'd got through a page. But I have listened to tapes, and there is quite a lot in the Course in Miracles that is in alignment with radical forgiveness, especially the concept of projection. That's the main part of the Course in Miracles, that we project our guilt for even having separated from God. We project our repressed guilt, which is deep and all-abiding, onto other people so that we can try to be free of that guilt. And so we use projection as a way of trying to not deal with our deepest feelings. So that part of it is very much in alignment with Course in Miracles. But other than that, it's different in many respects and in some very important respects. So you can just make up, if you're a student of the Course, I'm sure you'll be able to relate to radical forgiveness and be able to see the differences. All right. I've had a couple here. There are some things here on the that are not exactly questions, but just sort of stories that are very nice and very nice to read. But I really want to use the questions that are going to help other people to understand concepts and ideas and what have you. So I appreciate you sending in, David, your information about your CD that you've written, which was inspired by radical forgiveness. And thank you for doing that. It makes me feel very humble that you would do that, and that it's great music, and that's great. Thank you very much. And then Karen, who can't be on the call tonight, she gave me a story that would be too long to share and really doesn't tell us a whole lot about radical forgiveness, so I'm going to leave that one. Okay. Have we got any new ones, Carla? Let me do a refresh here and see if we got any new questions.
Yeah, there are a couple of new ones. I think along the lines of what we just talked about of how can you use radical forgiveness on depression, Diane from Calgary talks about using one on how can you use radical forgiveness to deal with cancer?
Oh, where's that one? I don't see that one. I see not a question, but thank you for muting, as it was hard to hear. Was that the good Diane that you were talking about?
Diane from Calgary.
Oh, here we are. Yeah, I got it. Okay, yes, I was recently diagnosed for the second time with stage 2 breast cancer. I understand how to use radical forgiveness in my relationships. I am, however, I want to learn how to apply it in dealing with this diagnosis and how it can assist me to move through this. We do have quite a lot in the book about this, Diane, which I do recommend that you read then, because I think it's going to help you a great deal. Joanne and I really started radical forgiveness by applying it to four people who had cancer so that they could work through some of the issues that might have been causative in the cancer itself. You see, there are lots of different reasons why we get cancer, but there's lots of emotional ones too. And you've got stage 2 breast cancer. I want to ask you to consider this question: who, about 5 to 7 years before the onset of the cancer, first time, broke your heart? Who broke your heart 5 to 7 years before the breast cancer? You see, the breast is in the heart chakra area. And what we find an awful lot is that the breast cancer is repressed grief about a lost love or a broken heart. If you do find that person or that incident, that's where you need to do some work. And that's you just use the radical forgiveness tools to forgive that person and to forgive the whole incident and see it all as perfect, and that will have an effect on your heart chakra, the energy, and on your energy body. And I believe that also assists you in healing the cancer as well, combined with, of course, whatever other treatment that you have to do. I don't recommend that, you know, you stop doing any treatment or anything, but in any cancer situation, my belief is that if you don't, or if you ignore the emotional, spiritual aspect of this situation, then you're missing out a tremendous amount of the healing potential for this. You're not, you know, that, what's the word I'm looking for? What's that when you get a list of things you have to do for your treatment? Your
protocol?
Protocol, yes. If you miss out of the protocol, the emotional, spiritual element, you're missing out a substantial part of both the causation of the original disease and the opportunity to heal it. So so those are the questions you need to ask yourself, and you can do the same thing that we just suggested earlier about doing this personal research and digging into your past and saying, you know, who was it that broke my heart? Usually about 5 to 7 years ago, but it could be even earlier than that. So, can we open it up to see whether she can answer that question?
Yeah, I'll do that in just a second. And also, Diane, this is Carla. And if you would like to email me after tonight's session, I can give you the name of one of our coaches up in Edmonton, Alberta, who many of our coaches have been through various healing crises, various emotional crises, physical problems. And we do have one of our coaches there just north of you who dealt with breast cancer and came through it with flying colors, and she utilized the radical forgiveness technology in it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And so I'd like to put her in touch with Bonnie. So
yeah.
Let me unmute it now and see if Diane can get in touch with us here.
Okay.
And also, I'd like to mention Colin's DVD on cancer and radical forgiveness. It's very beneficial to watch it.
Yeah, somebody's got a phone open and the radio's playing or something like that. I mean, this is just so inconsiderate. I don't know what it is. Can you hear us, Diane?
Diane, could you possibly type in another follow-up question? We just cannot hear you.
Okay. Thank you.
Colin, I'm going to go ahead and mute everyone again.
Yeah. God. I'm going to have to do a worksheet when I get off this phone. I mean, it just pisses me off so badly that people do this.
Well, I think some of it may be caused, too. I think even though we suggest that people not use their cell phones, some people only have cell phones these days.
I know.
Right. And it's the only way they can call in, and they just pick up some extra background noise.
Yeah, I know. It's really irritating because you want to have the conversation with people. You want this call to be interactive if possible.
Yeah.
But,
well, we had another question popped up on the subject of cancer. It came from Chris in New York, who had also asked an earlier question about where we have workshops and such. But Chris wanted to know, you were talking about the heart chakra being related to the breast, and he's asking what is behind liver cancer.
Which chakra would that be? That's going to be the third chakra, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be, you know, power and control. But liver, we often, I think we store anger in our liver. Anger and bitterness, especially gallbladder. But liver cancer, I think, is related to something to do with power and being controlled by something or somebody and repressing that anger or rage in the liver. I can't be all that specific. I'm not really an expert in this, but just in general terms, that's what I would say about liver. If we were able to open up the thing, we could probably find out some more, because I'm sure other people know more than I do about this. But I would suggest
the liver is very involved in processing toxins in the body.
Yeah, Yeah, and anger is toxic by, you know, tremendous. But there is a book that there are a number of books on the market. We have one on our own website, actually, that you might want to look at. It's not by me. It's by a guy called Michael Lincoln, who really delves into this kind of thing. It's unfortunately, it's a very expensive book, a very thick book, so I can't guarantee that it will give you exactly what you want, but that might be one thing. Caroline Mace, I think, has some stuff out there that would help you look at liver cancer, but that's as far as I can go, really. All right, Samantha in Fort Lauderdale. I'm new to this process. What if I don't see the perfection in the situation? What if I don't feel at peace? Does the 13 steps process still work? The answer is yes, it does. And first of all, you don't have to see the perfection. In fact, seldom do you ever. The way I put that is that we just don't know the mind of God. We don't really understand the big picture. When we say to ourselves, you know, I'm willing to see the perfection, it's the willingness that's the important thing, not that we see it. So the chances of you actually seeing what's perfect about it is very, very slim indeed. You can get some clues and you can see some what you might call gifts in the situation, and you can see what might be healed as a result of getting an epiphany or an insight in a relationship. But when we're talking about the spiritual big picture, we're not there yet. We're not able to really see the total spiritual perfection of everything that's happening in the universe and in the world. It's just impossible for us to wrap our minds around it. So we have to give up the need to know. That's, I think, is the most important thing that I would say in this situation. You don't need to know the perfection. All you need to do is to be willing to know that there is a perfection in there somewhere. Now, the second part of the question is, what if I don't feel at peace? Well, sometimes you don't. And it's radical forgiveness is very much a fake it till you make it proposition. It's usual that you feel a little difference, a shift, after you've done something like the worksheet or the 13 steps. And there usually is some feeling of peace, or if it doesn't come immediately, within hours or perhaps a day. But even so, does the 13-step process still work? Yes, it does, because something is still going on energetically, even if your mind or your heart won't quite let you go to a place of peace around it. But when you say yes to each one of those questions, there are the 13 steps asks you, just like the worksheet does, those of you who don't know, the 13 steps simply says, you know, bring to mind what it is that's upsetting you, feel your feelings around it, and then answer the following questions. And the following questions are things like, are you willing to see that there is a perfection in this situation? And you say yes out loud, even if you feel like saying no, even if you'd rather say no, but you still say yes, and you say it out loud. Now, this is why it's important. You say yes out loud and as loud as you can without scaring the neighbors, in order to that your body feels the resonance of the word yes. Because that word yes means I'm willing. I am willing to see the perfection in this situation. In other words, I'm willing to know or to be open to the possibility that Spirit is working in my life, and what has just happened to me is, in a sense, perfect, even though I don't know what it is and why it's perfect, but I'm willing to say that it is. And then the rest is automatic, because once it's deep in your body, your spiritual intelligence now takes it to the next level, and your spiritual intelligence is sort of housed in your body. Your body is the antenna for your spiritual intelligence. And once you've said yes and your body gets that resonance, that sets up the energy shift, and the energy starts to move, and your spiritual intelligence then does the rest, and you don't have to do any more. That's why it's so simple. You just say yes to 8 or 9 questions, and the rest is done for you. Sooner or later, you're going to feel the difference. So don't stop. I suspect you might be the kind of a person who's a little analytical and wants to figure things out, and that's what may be getting in the way. So my advice is, stop trying to analyze and figure things out and just do it, and then let it be whatever it is, and don't judge how you feel afterwards. And then one day you're going to be surprised.
Colin, and to add to that, too, when we're dealing with the human energy system, we are dealing very often with old grievances that maybe have embedded themselves very deeply from a long time ago. And just the continuing process of using the tools, even if it means doing them over and over again, does move us toward that place of peace.
Yeah.
Rebecca from Edmonton had a question that I think brings up some of the same kind of thing. If you scroll all the way to the bottom of your screen, Colin, she was talking about the fact that, you know, she's done some work on an issue and she doesn't feel real negative about it all the time, but then when she thinks about the possibility of running into the person she's done the work on, that she has some negative emotion come up around that.
Right, right. And you know, that was Hardy. You know, Hardy was making that same point too, that you know, he's got a pretty, you know, a story that that was very painful for him, and it still keeps coming up, but it doesn't come up with the same amount of energy each time. I think that's the thing about this, that even if it doesn't shift the energy all at once, it does it bit by bit by bit, layer by layer by layer. And so we just have to be patient with ourselves and to do it, and to recognize that it's always going to be there. You know, that pain, or not the pain, but the scar, it's not a wound anymore, but it's a scar. And if you think about, if you have a physical scar on your body somewhere, if you were wounded on your leg or something and you were badly cut, that scar every now and again will start to itch, especially if in cold weather like we've got now. It will trouble you a little bit. And that's what it is, the same with an emotional wound. It will leave a scar, and every now and again it will get activated a little bit, but it won't be like it was in the very beginning. All right.
Yeah. What? Just a follow up for Rebecca. You said you've done the worksheet on the website, but you've also, you know, read some material from others who promote forgiveness and practiced it when there's some sense of regret. And you say you've done it. You've done some forgiveness almost meditatively.
Mm.
I want to caution you about doing forgiveness as simply. Meditation is wonderful, but if you're just doing it as a kind of a mental exercise, it doesn't always access the deepest levels of the energy system, and it doesn't root out those weeds, if you will, that have taken, you know, root for so long ago. And I think that the radical forgiveness tools really do enable you to work on levels far beyond the mental and emotional.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost as though, you know, people look at radical forgiveness and the tools that we've created, and they say, how can they work? They're so simple. It doesn't require me to meditate. It doesn't require me to be a vegetarian. It doesn't require me to, you know, to do all sorts of spiritual practices. It just asks me to fill in this worksheet. So how can that possibly work? Well, as Carla was saying, it's not about influencing the mind or the subconscious mind. It's about shifting energy, and it's about connecting with our spiritual intelligence. And once we do that, we're home. But it does seem almost too simple to be true. That's why we call one of our workshops the Magic of Radical Forgiveness, because it does seem like magic. And the other one we call the Miracles. So I guess we're pretty committed to that idea. All right, Cindy in Michigan, can you talk about radical self-forgiveness? I want to eliminate this lifetime habit of negative monkey mind chatter, which is so automatic and shame-based, but sometimes it's hard to be specific or to identify the underlying basis of these feelings. All right, self-forgiveness is much more problematic, because, and this is why. when we're forgiving somebody else, there's a subject and an object. I am forgiving you. So I am the subject, you're the object, and it's very clear what that relationship is. I'm the victim, you're the victimizer. Or I'm the injured party, and you are the injurer. So there is a relationship there that we can understand, and it's clear, and it's a duality. Now, when we come to do radical self-forgiveness, what we get to understand is that we're trying to be subject and object in the same case. In other words, I'm both the injurer and the injured. And so who am I talking to when I say I want to self-forgive, radical self-forgiveness? Who's forgiving who? And it gets even more complicated as we go on, because with radical self-forgiveness, what we find is that when we start talking to the self, we find that we're not talking to a singular self, but a whole community of selves. There's all sorts of different people living in our head. And I suspect the one that you get talked to a lot when you're talking about the monkey mind, the chatter, I think there's probably since it's shame-based, as you say, then it's your inner judge or your inner critic that will not stop talking and answering back and will never forgive you, because that's not their role. Its role. Its role is always to make you feel ashamed. So you've got to find some other self in there that's going to help you, such a loving self or what have you. Now, that's why traditional self-forgiveness is so difficult and actually doesn't work, because you're never going to get all these people inside your head to agree to forgive you, because there's always going to be one or the other that's going to sabotage the whole thing and say, no, you're bad, you did something wrong, and we're going to punish you, and we're going to keep on punishing you. So what's the answer here? The answer is actually quite simple. With traditional self-forgiveness, you are appealing to your human self for the forgiveness. And as I've just indicated, that human self is not just one, it's a whole bunch of people. And it's never going to happen. With radical self-forgiveness, though, we make our appeal to a different self. We make our appeal to our higher self. That's a different entity. It's all part of who we are, but it's our spiritual self that was here before we took on a physical body. It will still be in existence when we die. In other words, it's our soul, it's our spiritual self, and it's the self that loves us unconditionally. So whenever we do a radical self-forgiveness workshop, a worksheet, we're appealing directly to that higher self, not to our human self. That's the big difference. But you need to have the worksheets in order to do it. It's very difficult, I think almost impossible, to do radical self-forgiveness or self-forgiveness of any kind without you do the worksheet, because it's the worksheet that connects you to your higher self. That would be, I hope that explains the difference in a nutshell, but it's a very, very important distinction. We're actually doing that, I think, with radical forgiveness, but that need to appeal to our higher self for self-forgiveness is much clearer in the self-forgiveness activity.
We had another question on self-forgiveness, Colin.
We did, huh?
From G in Worcester. Don't know if that's in your neck of the woods on the other side of the pond.
Yes,
And it's the information you gave is very, very valid. However, she's also talking about the relationship with grown children.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the key aspects with self-forgiveness is that we have to learn non-attachment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we really can't fully forgive ourselves if we remain hooked into the idea that if I can just forgive myself, then everybody else will forgive me too. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, they have their own soul's journey, which may be aligned with ours or may be very individual. And for whatever reason, those children need to go through something as well. And you have to give them the space to do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in your question, let me read it out so that everybody gets it. Or does everybody see these questions?
No, they don't.
No. How does a mother forgive herself, especially when grown children choose to not want to heal the relationship? I was young, overwhelmed mother and made many, many mistakes. I've done my best to forgive myself and have spoken with them and it's been over 30 years. I've been divorced, and they're very angry with me. I want to be free inside as my heart is hurting over the years. I've done my best, although I have to say no when trouble comes along. Thank you for helping. So right in there you can see that she only gives her initial G, so I'll call her G. G is really beating herself up and blaming herself for this breakdown in relationship between her and her children. And I think pretty sure she's linking it up to the fact that that you know she got divorced and they are very angry with her for getting divorced. So the first thing we have to say, and I think you know Carla has just alluded to it, we are all getting in life what it is we want. That's including those two children, or is it two? However many children they're getting what they want, and they're getting their experience. And so it's not your fault. They are choosing to live their life the way they want to live it. And feeling angry towards you is what they are choosing to do, that's their issue, and they're entitled to do it. And what you have to do is to know that it's not your fault, that you did what you needed to do and had to do in your life, and it's not your fault that they're angry. So the second part of that is that you have to allow them to be angry and love them just the same. It's the whole thing about a mother forgiving herself for, you know, her children being angry, it's probably one of the most difficult things, but it's really about you letting them go. If you've been divorced for 30 years, I'm assuming that these children are mature adults. And they're choosing to live their life the way they want to live it. And if they feel that they have to take you out of their lives, then there's nothing you can do about it, and it doesn't really matter in the sense that it's not your fault. It's just, I know it's painful. I don't mean to say that when it doesn't matter that it doesn't hurt. Of course it does. but when you can just forgive yourself by saying, it is not my fault. They are responsible for their own lives and living it the way they want to live it. I love them anyway, even though I can't get to see them. What I think might happen then is you'll find that they'll start to drift back towards you. They're trying to teach you, I believe, or it's likely that they're trying to teach you at the spiritual level to love yourself and to know that you have not made any mistakes. And once you get that, do the work on yourself and let them go. Let them be who they are, just the way they are. I think then you might find things start to work out and they'll start to come back towards you. But for as long as you make yourself wrong and want them to be any different, you'll keep the whole thing stuck. I hope that. Do you want to add anything to that, Colin? I think you were right on with what you said there.
Yeah, I think that covered it. We did get one follow-up question from Chaya in New York. Said, so in self-forgiveness, is it your higher self? Is your higher self the forgiver or the forgivee?
The higher self is the forgiver. When you ask for forgiveness, you are saying that what I did was wrong and I want forgiveness. But your higher self just smiles and loves you. Doesn't even want to know what you did because it knows that you can't make mistakes. It knows that everything is perfect, and it just loves you anyway. So there's no way that your higher self will ever, ever not forgive you because it's the part of you that unconditionally loves you. Your ego is the part that wants to judge and make you imperfect. But your higher self recognizes that your imperfection is your perfection. I hope that answers the question there.
Yeah, I think
right.
There was just some clarification that was that was needed.
Well, we've got about 8 minutes left.
We have one more quick question from somebody in Dana Point, which I imagine is California. Margaret, the question was, I've felt very complacent since Christmas. I've had trouble throwing away things and feel trapped in my own junk. Do you have any suggestions?
Trapped in my own junk.
I suspect she means clutter.
Oh, what, actual crime? Read it out again. I kind of missed it. I was looking for it, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I've felt very complacent since Christmas. I have trouble throwing away things and feel trapped in my own junk.
Huh. Well, since I assumed that you were talking about emotional junk, you might want to look at that. That the junk you're holding onto is actually representing some emotional baggage that you need to let go.
And since we're in a Mercury retrograde, this is a wonderful time to review, release, and let go.
Yeah. Yep. Time of renewal. Okay. Do we have any announcements before we finish?
Yes. Again, we had the, I believe it was Chris, was asking about workshops. Go to www.radicalforgiveness.com, and across the top menu there is a button for calendar. And click on the calendar, and you can go through the various upcoming months and see where Colin is going to be doing various programs. He does get out of Georgia. We do let him out of the cage. So,
but I am doing a self-forgiveness workshop at the first weekend in February.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Atlanta, and I'm doing a miracles workshop at the end of January, the last weekend of January, 29th to the 31st, a miracles workshop, and we still do have a few places left for that. Got plenty of spaces in the self-forgiveness workshop because that's not limited. The miracles workshop is limited to 15.
Okay, good. So just keep an eye on that calendar from month to month. There's always new things being added. And also, I had earlier told Diane up in Calgary that she could contact me to get a referral for one of our coaches in Canada. We also, a lot of our coaches are listed on the website, from the homepage on the website. You can, it's not on the top menu, but on the bottom right-hand side of the homepage, there is a place where it will help you find a coach. And if you don't find a coach, we don't have them in every area, but nearly all of our coaches do telephone coaching. And you can reach me at karla.garrett@radicalforgiveness.com, and I will help you find a coach.
Yeah, I mean, I do reckon we've got lots of self-help tools. We've got a bunch of them. Most of them are free as well on the website. But there's no substitute for having somebody that knows how to listen to your story and how to bring you to a place of forgiveness using the tools. So actually hiring a coach for a session or two or three is going to make a huge difference. And if you're stuck, then I would definitely recommend giving somebody, going on the website or checking out with Carla who she would recommend for your particular issue. It'll get you unstuck and it'll give you the kind of what you need.
And if you didn't catch my address, you can look me up under Coaches in Texas.
Yeah. Okay, then. I think that brings us to a conclusion. We're virtually there. Do we have a quick question, last one, or not? Let me see over.
I think Just somebody wanted to say that they enjoyed the conference call tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Crystal. I appreciate that.
Several people
wrote
in with their appreciation. And
yeah, great.
We thank you all for those comments.
Yeah. All right, well, the next one, of course, is February the 2nd. That's the first Tuesday of the month. But actually, you will be getting a notice about this. I think we've got we're going to be doing a larger event. Let me just check this. On February the 2nd. We're doing I'm going to be doing a live podcast with Sounds True from 8 to 9:30. So we might have to do our normal call immediately after that or some other time. Or maybe you'll do it, Carla. I don't know. But
could start it and you could join us in progress.
That's probably what we'll do then. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you and I will discuss that. But I knew there was something different for that Tuesday. But we'll try to keep it. We try to keep it the first Tuesday of every month. That way, everybody knows, and it becomes a habit, and they just get a reminder on Monday most of the time, anyway. And we meet up on that first Tuesday. So, God bless everybody. Thank you, Carla, for being on the call. Thank you, Joanne. And love everybody.
Happy New Year to everybody.
And Happy New Year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Colin.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Carla. Bye-bye.
Bye.